Welcome to Rise, a special documentary edition of Eastern Standard. Rise is produced in the studios of Dynamics Productions. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening. Well, the challenge of making a documentary is to set aside preconceived notions, to discipline against confirmation bias. In the matter of a proposal to locate a federal prison complex in Letcher County, Kentucky, we present the cases made for and against based on data and lived experience. It begins here.
I'm here tonight to read a statement on behalf of Congressman Rogers.
Danielle Smoot, Director of Communications for 5th District Republican Congressman Hal Rogers, reading the Congressman's statement to a public meeting about the prison held in Whitesburg last November.
I have worked to secure and protect funding for this project since 2006, and with more than 300 jobs on the line, it's a battle worth fighting in a region where jobs are desperately needed.
Well, there's no question about that. Letcher County, Kentucky, about as southeastern Kentucky as it gets, sharing a border with Wise County, Virginia, has lost most of its coal industry jobs. Jobs that often paid around $70,000 and you didn't have to have a college degree. Only about 10% of adults in the county hold at least a bachelor's degree, according to the Census Bureau. It was a hard but decent living. Today, median income is around $22,000. About one in four people are living below the poverty line. People have for many years been leaving, and with them has gone the tax revenue it takes to keep a county up and running. The population today is older, poorer, and in worse health than much of the country. And then last July, Letcher and the surrounding region was hit hard with a flash flood like nothing anyone could remember.
It hit like at 2 o'clock in the morning. It was dark anyway. Then the power went out. And the only thing that they could hear was they could hear the water, they couldn't see the water. And then they could hear the voices of people crying out for help, but you couldn't help them because you didn't know where they were.
That's Mindy Miller with the Housing Development Alliance. It was traumatic for many. 45 lives were lost. An analysis by the Ohio Valley Institute and the Appalachian Citizens Law Center found that 61 Letcher County homes were completely destroyed. 1,156 had major damage, and the damage was substantial for another 290. Most did not have flood insurance. It's a vulnerable time in financially stressed Letcher County, Kentucky. Would a federal prison turn things around? Bring to the county the economic benefits cited by Congressman Rogers through his spokesperson.
We have seen the positive impact that federal correctional institutions have had in Clay, Martin, and McCreary counties, boosting the tax base and strengthening our local workforce.
This statement is the centerpiece of this report, and it's complicated. We'll return to that shortly. First, how we got here.
My name is Kimberly Hudson, and I'm a site selection specialist with the Federal Bureau of Prisons. I'm here to conduct a public scoping meeting concerning a proposal to develop a new federal correctional institution and prison camp in Letcher County.
The Bureau of Prisons scoping meeting held in Whitesburg last November was led by Bob Nardi, Vice President of WSD USA, a New York-based engineering consulting firm working for the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
It's important to point out the proposal to develop this facility has its origins in 2006. It was at that time that Congress directed the Bureau of Prisons to undertake the investigations necessary to develop a new high-security correctional facility in Letcher County. So this goes back quite a long ways.
In fact, Congressman Rogers had first proposed the prison to the Letcher County Planning Commission in 2003 as its best chance at winning federal economic development money. A maximum security federal prison had just opened in McCreary County. What had for many generations been an economy based on coal mining was transforming. Coal was being replaced by corrections. Kentucky Justice and Public Safety Secretary Kerry Harvey.
We actually have more Federal Bureau of Prison facilities in the Eastern District of Kentucky than any judicial district of the 93 in the United States.
The Bureau of Prisons began an environmental impact study on sites for a facility in Letcher County in 2008. A site near the community of Roxana was selected in 2015. A year later, Congress allocated $444 million to build a maximum security prison there. That was later bumped up to $510 million. This would be the most expensive federal prison ever built in the U.S. But those original plans for a high-security prison were scuttled in 2019. It was the third time the Trump administration had tried to pull the plug on the proposed prison. Officials were insisting there was no need. Even though the U.S. incarcerates a larger share of its population than any other country for which data is available, the incarceration rate had fallen to its lowest level since 1995, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. At the same time, 21 federal prisoners from around the country joined forces in court to block the Letcher County project, arguing that the prison would damage the environment and expose inmates to toxic pollutants at the old mine site that is the leading contender to host the facility. After many delays, the judge hearing the case ordered it dismissed. In June of 2019, the Bureau of Prisons withdrew approval of the project. Congressman Rogers, now chairman of the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Commerce, Justice, and Science, which oversees funding levels for the Justice Department, managed to prevent the return to the federal treasury of the funds that had been set aside specifically to build a federal high-security prison in Letcher County. Years passed, and then came the catastrophic flood of last July. When the Bureau of Prisons returned to Whitesburg 4 months later, the prison plan had been revised. A high-security facility was off the table. The consultant, Bob Nardi.
At this time, the Bureau of Prisons is proposing to construct a federal correction institution and a federal prison camp in Letcher County. The objectives of doing so are to meet the need for modern correctional facilities and infrastructure, accommodate a portion of the inmate population, and address the need for modern facilities within this mid-Atlantic region of the country.
Nardi explained to the crowd of about 150 and 54 online viewers that the November meeting would kickstart a process required by the National Environmental Policy Act of 1969, also known as NEPA.
At the time NEPA was passed, it was intended to increase the public's awareness of the environment, encourage the public to play an active role in protecting the environment, require federal agencies such as the Bureau of Prisons to consider how actions such as developing a new correctional facility would infect the environment and to account for those impacts in its decision-making process. NEPA also requires the public be provided with opportunities to offer their input and provide comments prior to undertaking preparation of the EIS, and that's the main purpose of the meeting this evening.
My name is Elwood Cornett, and I am co-chair of the Letcher County Planning Commission.
Elwood Cornett was among local leaders speaking at the November meeting who see in a proposed new federal prison a badly needed boost for the Letcher County economy.
I'm here to express support for the correctional facility that you're talking about. Our Congressman Hal Rogers and Senator Mitch McConnell have worked diligently to bring this thing thus far. Also, our Planning Commission has worked very hard and diligently, as well as several others, to come as far as we have. Would mention that both Hal and Mitch, in their wisdom, that they have secured the money for this effort, and that by law, that money is designated for a federal prison in Letcher County.
My name is Terrence Ray. I'm coming to speak about my opposition to this project. I was part of a group about 6 years ago called the Letcher Governance Project that opposed this prison on the grounds that we felt we were being misled, that the jobs weren't going to materialize. There's plenty of evidence, if you look at other communities, that what happens is the Bureau of Prisons says that X amount of jobs will be created. And that is true, but a lot of those jobs will be filled by people not from here. We felt at the time, and I think we still feel this way, that that money could be better spent some other way. You can say that it's inevitable, that it has to be spent by law, that it's allocated, but that's false. They make it look like it's inevitable, that it has to be spent one way. But prisons are a political choice. All the reasons we're here tonight are political. Prisons are built by political decisions. Money is allocated by political decisions. And so I guess we have to ask ourselves, is that the kind of political choice we want to make? It's a lot of money. It probably could fill some pockets around here and help out. But I also think that if we are passionate about our community and seeing it through this difficult time, we need to be asking for money for other projects.
I think we're missing the point here.
Letcher County Planning Commission co-chair Don Childers. He operates a wholesale petroleum supply business, a chain of convenience stores, and the Pine Mountain Grill, a popular local restaurant.
Elwood Cornett and I and the committee that we work with, we've been working on this for about 6 or 7 years. And Hal Rogers has had this money appropriated for us. Now we're talking like this money would be wasted and it could be used for something else. That's not so. If we don't want the money, it goes back to Congress. And there's about 20 other representatives like Hal Rogers from 20 other states waiting for the money.
Letcher County Judge Executive Terry Adams.
The Planning Commission has put lots of time into this project, and I am in full support of this project, and the people in Letcher County needs this type of facility for our folks to work at.
What do potential neighbors of the proposed prison have to say about it?
I am a wildlife rehabber.
Mitch Whitaker speaking with us by phone from property that's been in the family for generations. It's adjacent to the proposed Roxana site.
I am actually a master falconer. I have been hunting with wild game for about 30 years. And what I do is I trap up wild birds like the red-tailed hawks, and I hunt and squirrels and rabbits. And I decided there that we could also rehab these birds, you know, because it does take a lot of permits and a lot of extra experience and stuff to have these permits. And so I checked into it, and I actually have a United States Fish and Wildlife permit that allows me to take in these injured hawks, owls, eagles, all the raptors. And the goal is to get those guys back out into the wild as quick as we can. And I have released several birds there on the property, and I just see it in the future. You know, it just would not be able to do that. They would just, I know that they would go up there and we'd have problems with them in the fences and the lights and all that stuff.
Whitesburg electrician Robert Lewis.
It's not a perfect solution, but it would be a stimulus for our area. Please show our support for any possible jobs and construction possibilities for our county, especially after losing folks moving out of here after the flooding, not counting the coal jobs we've lost. This prison would provide federal jobs with very good pay and great insurance that would be used at our local clinics and hospitals. Workers would secure housing, mostly in Letcher County, and most of their families would attend Letcher County schools, helping to ensure our teachers and staff keeping their jobs secure. Especially after losing population after the flood, any families moving into or working in Letcher County would be a positive, not a negative. Tax-paying jobs that will shop, eat, buy fuel, etc., and mostly in Letcher County. Who would oppose that?
Former Letcher County Judge Executive Carol Smith.
We've tried to get a lot of industry in here, and anything we get is going to have a downside. But this prison is going to provide a lot of good paying jobs with job security, with benefits, and it's going to allow our people to stay home and not have to leave. And I would like to say that I support it 100%. And anything that I can do, I'll be glad to help with it.
Whitesburg attorney Mike Caudill.
I've worked with the commission and under the able leadership of Elwood Cornett and Don Childers, and it's been a great relationship to work with Senator McConnell and Congressman Hal Rogers. We have fairly met every question that's been raised. We have overcome every hurdle that's been put in front of us. The money is there. The Bureau of Prison needs the prison, and we in Letcher County needs the job, so build it.
My name is Artie Ann Bates, ArtieAnnBates.
Dr. Bates is a psychiatrist living in the Letcher County community of Blackie.
You mentioned economic development from prisons that in McCreary County, Clay County, and Martin County, those prisons have been there anywhere from 18 to 25 years. And those three counties have significantly high poverty rates, higher than Letcher County, higher than the state. So I'm not finding, maybe I'm wrong, I'm not finding that there's been tremendous economic growth.
Congressman Rogers' spokesperson, Danielle Smoot.
We have seen the positive impact that federal correctional institutions have had in Clay, Martin, and McCreary counties, boosting the tax base and strengthening our local workforce.
What do the numbers tell us? Jason Bailey, founder and executive director of the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy.
So in Clay County, about 20% fewer people are employed now than they were when prison was cited, about a 43% drop in Martin County, and about a 14% drop in McCreary County. So it's certainly not the case that we've seen employment grow in those counties since the prisons opened.
Have poverty rates in these counties improved since the prisons opened?
Poverty rates have also remained extremely high and among the highest actually in the entire United States. In the counties that we're talking about, the poverty ranges from 34% to 41%. Of all the 3,100 counties in the United States, Martin County is the fifth poorest. Clay County is the 14th poorest. McCreary County is the 32nd poorest. So we're talking about some of the poorest areas in the entire United States, two or three decades after these projects were constructed with a promise of, a better future because of them.
As mentioned, the Bureau of Prisons says the Letcher Complex would create 300 jobs.
Even those jobs that are open to the public, there's some pretty strict requirements in terms of age. You have to be below a certain age. Drug testing, credit checks, criminal legal system checks, as well as education and experience preferences that the Bureau of Prisons looks for that do disqualify many people, particularly in a low-income area like Eastern Kentucky. So we can't expect that the 300 jobs, if this prison were to materialize, would go to the people who live there, not anywhere close. A large share would come from outside the community.
Jason Bailey of the Kentucky Center for Economic Policy. A second independent data set compiled by the State Data Center at the University of Louisville verifies the trend cited by Jason Bailey. Other researchers have come to the same conclusion.
There's not that much in the way of economic growth.
Wanda Bertram with the nonprofit Prison Policy Institute.
Annual turnover rates in prisons were 15% or more, even in the 2000s, when prisons had some of the highest budgets they've ever had. But because of the fact that we are incarcerating just as many people today, while spending even less money on making these environments humane for the people inside, they're even worse places to work than they always have been. And so people are understandably quitting their jobs and finding better options.
The maximum security prison in McCreary County opened in 2003. At the time, Blaine Phillips was the county judge executive. When Daily Yonder reporter Sylvia Ryerson talked with Judge Phillips in 2009, 6 years had gone by.
It's not really turned around the economy, as you would think. The people, at first they'll entice you and say that, there's motels will fill up whenever the people are coming to visit them, and actually that people even will move closer to be where other people. That's not the case here. It's such a confined part That's not the real case.
Wow.
So it's really not had the economic impact that we thought it would have. And another thing too, it's tax exempt, so there's no federal dollars on it. Now, there's no taxes that they pay on the facility at all. And they took, I think, 300 or 400 acres from private person who was paying Pratt County taxes on it, property taxes, and we don't even receive that on it. And so, you know, and our tax collector, our occupational tax collector, will tell you how much the employees have fought paying that. It's been a struggle.
Much of McCreary County land is owned by the federal government, so the county's tax base is exceptionally limited. To try to make up for it and benefit from the presence of the prison, the decision was made to establish an occupational tax. Stephanie Tucker was and is the McCreary County Tax Administrator. When Sylvia Ryerson sat down with her in 2009, Tucker recalled the resistance to that new tax.
It was a big fight before I was ever hired for this job anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, fiscal court had to go through all the motions of, you know, discussing it and you know, deciding if they wanted to even put this into action, the occupational tax. And the prison, I think, was just coming in at that time. There was plenty of workers over there being transported in from other states, and they were in uproar over it and coming in complaining about it at that time before it was ever even implemented, you know. So once it was and I was in office and they had to come in and, you know, do what they had to do, then I started taking the heat. You know, it transferred from fiscal court, you know, and all them to me. They wanted to, I guess, continue complaining, and I was just the scapegoat. You know, they have no intentions of ever retiring here, spending their life here, settling down here. They're just here for a few years. That's in their opinion. They're in and out, and they feel like they're losing their wages.
Although the city of Whitesburg does collect a payroll tax, Letcher County does not have an occupational tax. Blaine Phillips, the former McCreary County judge executive, had hoped that the prison employees would settle in McCreary County.
It's not been the God-sent thing that we thought it would be, but on the other hand, that's been a rural county. A lot of these people that are coming in, they're high-paying jobs, to be honest, 50, 60, 70,000, and they choose to live in a larger city north of us, which I don't fault them for it at all. Do not fault them at all, because they really like the standard of living there better than they do here. So the fact that they live in another county does not bother me. But of course, you know, if they would live, I'm not sure, is Whitesburg, if it's a thriving place, but I assume it's a rural area as well. Okay, what's the largest city near Whitesville?
Probably like Prestonsburg.
Okay, then let me assure you, the Virginia Wiley State, but let me assure you, the majority of the people will live in Prestonsburg. They really will. They'll move to Prestonsburg, where there's malls and where there's activities and where there's things going on. They're not going to really just come, I mean, unless you're just very, very fortunate. But I don't think that's going to happen, because you'll have people here that are moving here, maybe perhaps from Phoenix, Arizona, and they're going to sell their house in Phoenix, Arizona for $200,000. And so they're going to come to your community and they'll look and see what you have. And some of them will snub their nose up to it because it's not up to what their standards are.
Judge Phillips passed away in 2020. 6 years after the prison opened, in an interview with reporter Sylvia Ryerson, Jimmy Green, who for 17 years had preceded Phillips as McCreary County's first judge executive, was disappointed.
It was like Santa Claus has come. He's given us something. He's given us a gift that we didn't expect, didn't know anything about. And I was just overjoyed. Look, we've been here now, we don't have the coal mining anymore and we don't have the timber. We can have something here that'll provide jobs for us forever.
And concerning the promise of employment of local residents.
My only regret is that, of course, we have provided some jobs for some of our people. But I'm disappointed that we don't have more of our own citizens working there. But a lot of the jobs are lot of the employees are from out of the county. But what disturbs me is that the majority of them live out of the county. And I would much rather have seen them come here and buy a home and stay here in McCreary County.
Judge Green passed away in 2017. 14 years have gone by since that interview. Today, the McCreary County Judge Executive is Jimmy Green, son of the county's first Judge Executive, who you heard earlier.
I think overall it was a good thing.
Reporter Crystal Jones talked with Judge Green.
Having been 20 years now since the prison was built, what's it been like for you in McCreary County living with the prison there? Have the jobs come to fruition?
Well, you know, it kind of got off to a slow start, but it certainly, as they are building the prison, which is a process that takes several years, there's a lot of employment there. So a lot of people were put to work and, you know, we had opportunity to make good money. And then it was a little bit slow at first as far as the retention of local people working there at the prison. But my understanding now is that we have quite an influx of our individuals in the county that are working at the prison. So that aspect of it has been good. And then, of course, you know, the occupational tax that those employees pay certainly, you know, comes back to the county government, certainly helps your budget as far as the county goes. And, you know, and local businesses, I don't have exact numbers, but I'm sure local businesses, especially like restaurants and convenience stores and things like that, they've certainly benefited from the prison being located here in McCreary County.
Let's go back to the tax issue. When this first became an issue, there was some resistance to the taxes. How has that been worked out with them?
Well, like you said, anytime you introduce a tax, which is an occupational tax, which no one likes a tax, but you know, especially in a county of our size, and the things unique about McCreary County is upwards of 70% to 80% of our county is owned by federal government. So we have the lowest tax base coming in than any other county in the state. So that really hurts us. So we needed that money in order to help with the infrastructure, ambulance service, road departments, you know, jail transportation, all of that factored in. So it got a little slow. There's a stipulation on the number of people before you can do an actual withdrawal from someone's check that goes straight into where they would pay their occupational tax. And there's a threshold, I think, of 500 federal workers. And we are just now getting to just a little bit over that number. So there was a little bit of animosity in the beginning, but as far as that goes, it's really going pretty smooth now.
And for those folks who have come to work in the prison, were they primarily based out of McCreary County or are those folks from outside of the county?
From what I have seen, the majority of them seem like they were from out of the county. But since I've been in office, I know for the last 4 years, it seems like we're getting a lot of the locals now that have qualified and got the training that they needed. So it seems like we have, and I don't have an exact figure on that, but it seems like we have a lot more local people. You know, before we had people, we pulled them from all the surrounding counties, but it does now appear that we have a lot of local people that are working there and making a really good wage with good benefits.
Mm-hmm. And so if you, from your perspective, being the judge there, and you've seen this process through from the beginning with your father starting out when the prison was, you know, first built until now in your current seat, what honest advice would you give to the folks in Letcher County? Would you say yay or nay to a prison in their town?
You know, don't get your expectations up too high, but for several years while they're building the prison, for instance, there'll be, you know, the wages will be really top of the line. And then actually the jobs they're working at the prison, from my understanding, are really good jobs, good paying, good benefit federal jobs. So I think it's been a positive.
Reporter Crystal Jones talking with McCreary County Judge Executive Jimmy Green. Much more ahead. I'm Tom Martin, and you're listening to Rise, an Eastern Standard documentary series on WEKU.
This is Brian Burkhart with coming events from Kentucky Humanities. On April 6th,
Jeff Baggett will present Revolutionary War in a Trunk at the LaRue County Public Library. The program will begin at 11 a.m. On Saturday, April 8th, the Pulaski County Public Library will be hosting Kentucky's Chautauqua Roscoe Tarleton Goose, Kentucky Derby winner, at 10 a.m. This show is sponsored by the Daughters of the American Revolution Somerset Chapter. Monday, April 10th, features primetime family reading at Nancy Elementary School in Nancy and at the Whitley County Cooperative Extension in Williamsburg. Both programs begin at 5 p.m. For more information on programs and coming events, visit KentuckyHumanities.org. For Kentucky Humanities, I'm Brian Burkhart. Now back to Eastern Standard with Tom Martin.
Jeffrey Justice is executive director of the Pine Mountain Partnership. He sat down with Mountain Eagle reporter Sam Adams.
I know it's been said by the Planning Commission that this would create hundreds of jobs in Letcher County. Does that sound like a realistic estimate to you?
Yeah, jobs? Definitely does. So this secondary proposal is a medium security facility. So although you don't have as much armed guards as you would in a maximum security facility, you have more administrative staff. And about 100 jobs would seem about right for a facility this size. And that doesn't even include the hundreds of construction jobs that will exist as the project gets built out. And not only construction of the facility itself, but we'll have to build a new water plant, or at least a water system, to get that municipal water supply to that facility. So that'll be a great opportunity for people in the Blackie area and that whole western part of the state. It'll dramatically reduce the cost to expand that water system once it's put in place.
One of the criticisms that I've heard as far as economic development is that most of the people who would work at a prison are people from other places, that there's not going to be enough people here and enough qualified people here to get those jobs.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
That definitely could be the case. But my argument to that is, although folks that currently live here may not be qualified or ready to take those jobs, shame on us if we don't welcome outsiders to come and live in our community and move here, create opportunities that it's wise for them to move here, create an environment in our downtowns that they would want to move here. That responsibility and burden really falls on us. We've got to create a community that people want to live in.
What about cell phone infrastructure? That's one that's been mentioned because there's no cell phone signal in that area.
There's no cell phone signal in that area, and it has definitely been mentioned. It has not been appropriated or promised. So our local cell phone provider, if you're listening, if you're reading this, I urge you to pay attention to our project. The cost to implement such technology is very expensive. We know that. We recognize that. But progress can't be made without a little bit of speculation.
And speaking of speculation,
there's been some property change hands privately. Some large landowners have invested and bought some land around where the prison's going to be on speculation that people will want to move there, or even that the price will go up. And those are local land companies that are really speculating the way they used to do whenever coal was a big business.
Two sites within Letcher's 338 square miles are under consideration. A former mountaintop removal site near the small community of Roxana, about 7 miles west of Whitesburg, and Payne Gap at the base of Pine Mountain, about 7 miles east of Whitesburg and nearer to the town of Jenkins. Whichever site is ultimately chosen, that acreage, having become federal property, will be removed from the Letcher County tax base. Dr. Judah Shept is an associate professor in the School of Justice Studies at Eastern Kentucky University and author of Coal Cages Crisis, The Rise of the Prison Economy in Central Appalachia.
I think we have to sort of evaluate both what the promised jobs and development suggest about the region and what building prisons might portend, and also evaluate their failures at actually providing economic development.
And again, the data, what does it tell us?
The data around prisons and jails providing economic development or supporting sort of other development occurring around them, the data around that, particularly in already economically distressed areas, is pretty clear. And it says that the data says both nationally and regionally in Central Appalachia, that prisons not only don't bring economic development in some places, again, particularly in economically distressed counties, they can actually sort of further depress those economies.
Another indicator of economic impact is median income. Economist Jason Bailey.
The median household income has been has remained flat and very, very low in these counties. There was a little bit of bump in the 1990s, but that happened across Eastern Kentucky and across the state. And in Eastern Kentucky, it partly had to do with a coal boom at that time. But that settled back down. Median household income has continued to be extremely low, about $30,000 in the counties that we're talking about. And we haven't seen that improve in the 20 to 30 years since these prisons have operated.
Out-migration's been a persistent problem for Eastern Kentucky. Has the presence of these prisons in these three counties, has that reversed the flow of people who have been leaving these counties?
It's not. We've continued to see people move out. Clay County has lost 11% of its population since the prison opened there. Martin County's lost 13%. McCreary County has lost 3%. So the bigger trends that have hit the region, these prisons have done nothing to reverse those. And it's similar in these counties as in other counties that didn't get a prison. So we're just not seeing that it's able to turn the tide on the economic challenges and declines that Eastern Kentucky has faced.
In a 2006 article in the Letcher County News Press, Congressman Rogers was quoted as saying, "Unfortunately, the prison business is essentially recession-proof, and they are built to last."
That's just fundamentally incorrect.
Professor Judah Shept.
You don't have to look very far to see how that backfires. So mass incarceration is really sort of uneven across states, and you can see some places, particularly I'm thinking of a place like upstate New York, which in some ways resembles our region in Eastern Kentucky. New York built, I think, 50 of its 72 prisons, all of which were upstate and rural in the 1980s and 1990s. And then, you know, recognized that they had invested very heavily in the system that just created many more problems than it solved in mass incarceration. And they've begun to close prisons. And for these rural communities, where farms had left and industry had left, and they had sort of sutured their futures to prisons, they were sort of left in the lurch as these prisons closed. So there is some evidence from other rural regions around the country that these prisons are very much not recession-proof, and that when they do close, they can pose pretty significant problems for communities.
As mentioned earlier in the hour, this is complicated.
One of the more sort of granular and even mundane things that the prisons do sometimes do, which we have to acknowledge and think about, is they can be attached to county needs and plans for sort of basic municipal infrastructure needs and development, whether that's renovating wastewater treatment plants or extending water lines to more remote parts of counties. We're in a place where counties, to access certain development funds, like, for example, abandoned mine lands grant monies, counties sometimes have to prove on a grant application that there's some economic development project in the works in order to be eligible to apply for certain grant money to update infrastructure. And a prison, despite all evidence to the contrary, can at least serve on these grant applications as that evidence. And so the presence or promise of a prison can make a county eligible to perform that sort of basic municipal infrastructure upgrades.
Despite repeated attempts to accommodate an interview with Congressman Rogers to address these questions and these issues, the congressman has declined to speak with us. We were curious about what's happening on the state level in the Kentucky prison system. We found another dynamic in play that must be considered. Too few qualified people want these jobs. It came up in an interview with State Justice and Public Safety Secretary Kerry Harvey, whose office oversees the operation of 13 Kentucky prisons.
Out of those 13 facilities, six of them have vacancy rates of frontline correctional officers that are over 50%, and several of those are over 60%. So our staffing shortages remain critical.
And what does that look like inside state prisons?
What it looks like is we have our correctional officers and others involved in the security of these facilities are working way too much overtime. And we know that at some point that takes a toll on a person. They're not as sharp in that 16th hour at work as they were in the first hour. And it also causes people to leave the employment when they otherwise wouldn't. So it increases turnover, which means we're working not only with a short staff, but a less experienced staff, which has its own problems. We often bring in people who are not facility correctional officers to do correctional officer work. For example, probation and parole people come in and work overtime shifts, and others who are employed by the Department of Corrections to just help cover some of these necessary posts.
Why are state prisons so short-staffed?
Our frontline people and our wardens tell us that really the change to the pension system that was made several years ago is probably the single biggest impediment to recruiting the necessary staff.
There's been some improvement.
In December of 2021, Governor Beshear approved a 10% increase in the wages for our security staff. Then in February of 2022, we implemented a series of increases in shift premiums and locality pay, which brought the pay to roughly $20 an hour for those who work off shifts. That's still not a whole lot of money for these sort of essential jobs that are also very difficult jobs.
The average hourly wage for a federal corrections officer in Kentucky is just over $24 an hour. Harvey confirmed that Kentucky is competing with federal prisons for staff. What is it like to work in a prison?
I grew up in Wise County, just over the mountain, where Red Onion and Wallins Ridge prisons are.
Speaking at the November meeting in opposition to the prison, filmmaker Amelia Kirby, who with Nick Zabirla produced the 2006 documentary Up the Ridge, it describes human rights violations and racial tension between staff and inmates at Wallins Ridge State Prison, just over the border in Virginia, and the social impact of moving hundreds of thousands of people of color from cities to distant rural prisons.
I watched as the people that I grew up with, who would have gone in the mines, became COs. And I know not just from what I saw in my community and my friends, my family, but from research that's happened all over the country, that divorce and domestic violence and addiction all go up in places that use prisons for jobs.
When you put people behind locked doors, the people who have the keys become the targets of the people who don't have keys.
Dr. Artie Ann Bates, the Letcher County psychiatrist, speaking in November.
I'm a psychiatrist. I've worked in prisons. I've worked in psychiatric facilities with locked doors. And I'm aware that there's a different psychology when we lock people up.
Wanda Bertram with the Prison Policy Institute.
People who work in prisons are constantly exposed to trauma of various sorts because they'll witness suicide attempts by incarcerated people. They could witness violence. You're doing a job that means being surrounded by trauma and suffering, and it's both monotonous and requires constant vigilance. What that all leads to is higher rates of depression, higher rates of PTSD, extremely high rates, I should say, actually. I think higher rates of PTSD than veterans of the Afghan or Iraq wars. And, you know, on top of that, physical ailments like hypertension and heart disease are more common among corrections officers as well.
So with a required environmental impact assessment underway, a question hangs in the air. Would a federal prison be good for the economy of Letcher County, Kentucky? The public meeting hosted by the Bureau of Prisons last November heard pros and cons.
This is the opportunity that we need. We've lost a lot of coal jobs, and the recent floods and the building sites, the scarcity of building sites is going to make people have to move away. And I don't want people to move away.
The new purpose, the rehabilitation focus, is something that I can live with as a citizen here a whole lot more easily than I could live with the idea of a maximum security prison. This is designed to be correctional. I'm hoping there's a lot of rehabilitation component to that, and that it is something we can all feel much better about than not only the type of people we bring for maximum security, but then also the overall goal of the facility.
It would be crazy to turn down anything that would provide any jobs and stimulus for our county, especially now after suffering from the flooding.
We've had a very traumatic flood, and people need houses, and we're going to build a prison. I'm not quite understanding the logic around that.
Divorce and domestic violence and addiction all go up in places that use prisons for jobs.
If we are passionate about our community and seeing it through this difficult time, we need to be asking for money for other projects. And I don't think this prison is the best way to realize that.
In early March, President Biden began the fiscal 2024 appropriations process with a proposal to eliminate funding for the construction of a new federal prison in Letcher County. Will Congressman Rogers, now in his 42nd year in Washington and as its longest-serving member, the Dean of the House of Representatives, be able to once again block the return of the prison funding to the Treasury? Some House Republicans are pushing to cut spending, and there's a lot of uncertainty over how Washington will raise the debt limit, so the outcome is uncertain. There is a much larger discussion about the rate at which this nation imprisons its people, disproportionately people of color. Our focus in this hour has been on one small aspect of that conversation, a plan to add another federal penitentiary to an impoverished region already cited in press reports as the nation's jailer. Special Projects reporter Chris Begley has some thoughts.
Eastern Kentucky has a lot of prisons. Some of them you can't see from the main road because they're up on the hilltop or hidden by the forest, but eventually you do see it. From a distance, they look a little like a high school until you see the sun shining off the stainless steel razor wire. Sometimes there's so much shiny wire that it's the first thing you notice. Sooner or later, whether it's the razor wire or the guard towers or the signs down on the highway to not pick up hitchhikers, you understand what you're looking at, and it has changed your community. We talk about these proposed projects in terms of economic benefits, jobs, infrastructure, or maybe in terms of other impacts on the community. But it's worth remembering what the thing is that will or won't bring these benefits, because it matters. What you put in your community, or in your household, or in your body, matters. Sometimes you see a change right away. Other times it may take years, or decades before you realize the impact of what you've done. The form that something takes can make all the difference. A project that creates coal mining jobs is different from one that creates jobs in a call center, or for nurses, construction workers, or teachers. They require different sets of skills, physical ability, or special certifications. The pay matters, of course, and so do working conditions. Also, the pride that a job instills in the individual and in the community can be important. My great-grandfather worked at the Union Carbide plant near Clendenin, West Virginia, where the first gallon of antifreeze for automobiles was made. He wasn't a chemist. He just held a regular job there, same as many other people in the community. But I heard about it decades later, and there was a sense of pride that this had happened there. We later found out all the negative impacts that those chemical plants had on the health of the community. The details mattered. During the Great Depression of the 1930s, a different great-grandfather worked for the Civilian Conservation Corps, one of the back-to-work programs that was part of Roosevelt's New Deal. He built fire towers in the Daniel Boone National Forest. I remember my grandmother pointing those out to me when I was a kid. She was proud, and I was proud, that our family had been part of that. During that same time, my great-grandmother would travel to Jackson, Kentucky and buy groceries, then come back and resell them in Letcher County. That became the foundation for the store that she and her husband ran for decades. Her name was Tessie Mae Caudle, but her husband's name is on the store, C.B. Caudle. That store benefited the community in ways that go far beyond selling groceries. It was a community space where all kinds of things happened, and it was a loss to the community when it closed down. Having it mattered far beyond the few jobs it created. If we have the power to choose, we use it. We choose which phone calls to answer, or who to invite over to our house. We choose who we pick up in our car, even without a sign warning us about hitchhikers. We choose what to support and what to oppose. What we choose for our community will matter in complex ways and for a long time. That's a choice to make carefully.
Thank you for joining us. Rise, an Eastern Standard documentary series, is produced at the studios of Dynamics Productions. Mike Savage, executive producer, Jean Marie Hibbard, senior producer, Chris Begley, associate producer and special projects reporter, Crystal Jones, reporter, Neil Kesterson, sound designer and technical director. Our thanks to Mimi Pickering for audio from the Bureau of Prisons scoping meeting last fall, and to Sylvia Ryerson for interviews with officials in McCreary County. RISE is online at weku-rise.org, and you can contact us from the site. You can find us on the WEKU app, on NPR One, and on the Google News app. I'm Tom Martin. Thanks for listening to RISE, a documentary production of Eastern Standard on WEKU.